This is F1 Debrief. Formula One leads to many great memories. On this show, we discuss technological focus, cost caps and taxes, plus Frank. We had some feedback recently from Avida in Israel, who said, "Hi, Christine and the gang. You used to produce podcasts. What happened? I miss them."
What did happen, Christine? What did happen to the podcast we used to produce?
Yeah, that was my fault.
It's all your fault.
I can't believe it was actually almost 2 months between podcasts. Mm. At that time, it didn't fly because I was studying for exams.
Yes. Yes, you were working very hard, which is a shame because it felt like we were just getting to where we wanted to get to with the shows. We knew what we were doing. We found a format that we liked. We started
having lots of fun.
Yeah, we were having a lot of fun with it. And then, unfortunately,
real life. That's what it is. We're grown-ups.
Real life comes first. However, you've got a bit of a break. It's the tiniest of tiny breaks right now. Before you leave the country, you leave me to man side podcast all by myself.
Squeezing in a couple of podcasts before I jet off to the US, which is very exciting because I've never been to the States before.
Which is, it's great. It's really exciting for you. What about the rest of us left behind with no podcasts to listen to?
You're here to manage my podcast. I'm leaving you in charge of my Fact Bite Fact Box, which I'm not very happy about. And we'll just have to see how it goes. But I will be back in a couple of weeks to pick up all the pieces.
Well, let's make the most of the time we have with you right now. Let's record a show. What have we got? Apart from feedback complaining, where on earth are we? Do we have any other kind of feedback?
We have loads of feedback. And I was thinking, because we've been away so long and it's all our fault, we need to instigate a sort of no topic is out of date thing. Because we've got a variety of subjects here dating back a little while.
You're making this up as you go along. I like it. Hit me.
Okay, so first out of the hat, we have a message from Mike in the USA, in Washington. He says, "Christine, just got to listen to your last show. There is another element to the fuel flow meter that does apply outside qualifying. I will admit, I love your passion for a sport that is so technologically focused, yet that isn't your thing, obviously. So I'll try to keep this non-technical."
You're just a girl, remember?
"Yes, the flow meter keeps them from having special qualifying engines and programs, but during the race, it limits their options for turning fuel flow up and down during a race. An engine is always limited by the amount of air it can intake, because if you can get more air, you can put more fuel. With a naturally aspirated engine, ambient pressure sets the natural limit. That's why we had 21,000 RPM engines. More revs equaled more air and equals more power. But with a turbo, suddenly that opens up whole new possibilities. The ability of a turbo, especially one controlled so excellently as the new power units do, to vary the amount of pressure in an engine could give whole new strategies to engine use. For example, maybe a team would choose to run more power in the first laps of a race, using more fuel to gain position, only to turn down for end and play defense. F1 is notoriously difficult for passing, and slow cars holding up faster ones is very common. Or maybe a team would have a push-to-pass button for use on straights. The fuel flow limiter removes that variable. All racing series have some sort of limiters. Some turbo engines have maximum pressure limits. I remember when Kart had problems with teams modifying the blow-off valves to increase pressure. Endurance racing has used air restrictors for years. F1 has chosen to combine a rev limit, and rather than limiting airflow, they limit the fuel flow, so no team can alter the max power during a race above a certain point. Love your podcast. I initially found you several years ago, but just this year started listening to podcasts on my mobile, so I looked you up and subscribed. Thanks, Mike."
And breathe. Did you follow that, I guess, is the first question.
Well, no, that was quite technical, and like
it was
says,
a simplified version.
Technology in cars is not my thing. That's no secret.
That is a fine point raised by Mike. I hadn't considered. The last thing you want to do is enable a technology to prevent overtaking a Formula One, especially given the gains we've made by having DRS in recent years. Enable and further overtaken. The last thing you want to do is restrict it by the new technology. So that's a fair point. I take that point on board. Patronizing contact message or not?
That was a lot of talking for me, so I'm going to let someone else do the talking now. We've had a voicemail from Jordan, who wants to have a bit of a rant about something.
"Christine, Mr. C. Hi, this is Jordan Willman from Kamloops, BC, who you've known for maybe over 6 or 7 years. Anyway, I have a gripe. I have a complaint. No, it's not about you guys. No, it's not about the races that we've seen, although I may have comments and other voicemails in the future. Anyway, huge gripe, and I want to talk about and rant about for a few minutes. Driver contracts. What's the point of a driver's contract these days in Formula One? I can't stand it when teams sign drivers to a long-term contract and don't honor it, and they think they can terminate it and just buy out the rest of their contract. this is really getting to me, because I'm seeing, reading all these news columns here about people discussing where Kimi Raikkonen should go and how he might leave Ferrari. What's wrong with you people? This guy signed a 2-year contract. If I was in charge of F1, I would say, look, you can sign a driver for however long you want, but you know what? Whatever that salary is, and you want to buy it out their last couple of years, let's say like Sergio Perez, right? He signs a 3-year deal. Oh, they buy out the rest of his contract. They should have something in order where if a team wants to buy out a driver like that, you know what? Times 2 of the buyout penalty. That's like a buyout penalty in the NHL or NBA or whatever. Teams and the drivers need to have some repercussions here. It shouldn't just be, oh, we buy out the driver, give them the rest of the money, and whatever, life goes on. I'm sorry, you're signing someone to a long-term deal and you want to buy them out after their first year? I'm sorry, that whole Sergio Perez thing, I don't care. But you know what? You should have some, McLaren, you should have some responsibility. You wanted to sign them to that long-term deal. Honor it.
What do we think then, Christine? Is Jordan onto something? Are contracts made to be broken? Should contracts be honored for their entire lifetime? Is that how Formula One teams should approach it?
It definitely is a problem that drivers will sign up for these multi-year deals, but everyone knows that doesn't mean anything, and they always have stipulations in there that it's dependent on performance on both sides.
Yeah, well, Kimi Raikkonen, of all people, should know this. Ferrari paid him out of his last contract he had with the team in order to get, I guess, Fernando into their seat, and that he took that as a chance to leave Formula One and go rallying.
He was quite happy about that.
Yeah, he's been there before. He knows the score. I do like an angry voicemail, though, and Jordan did hit on an excellent point by mentioning the tax that the NBA impose on teams. Now, we had a guest post from Christopher Wheelerhan.
Yes, we
was
did.
It him? Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks back, and that was regarding cost caps, Formula One teams having cost caps, and then driver salaries being taxed on top of that, which apparently a lot of American teams already do. And it ties in nicely with what Jordan's saying. I would imagine that's a thing that should, you know, that would be a good thing if it was brought into Formula One, to tax a Formula One team anything over a certain amount, then they have, you know, they take a hit on a driver's salary, that comes out of their budget, and if they then decide to pay off a driver early, that obviously would also come out of the budget. But until you've got a budget cap in place, which we don't have in Formula One at the moment, it doesn't really make sense. They're just paying money to the FIA, and the FIA are banking it. Whereas if there was an actual a budget cap in place, then that additional tax would begin to hurt the team a lot more, and then they might pay more attention to things like contracts.
It sounds like a good idea, but then you may have a situation where, for example, Sergio Perez, now I'm not saying he would have been rubbish in the McLaren, he wasn't really given a chance to show either way, but if he was there for 3 years and absolutely not suited to that car, you'd have to wait for 3 years before McLaren could be competitive again. That would be quite a drudge for them and for fans.
That's an interesting point. Yep. If it was a match made in hell, if it was Fernando Alonso at McLaren, somebody who just didn't fit.
And if they couldn't afford to pay the tax, they just had to wait for the contract to time out.
Yeah. The other risk, I guess, is that no driver could ever secure a long-term contract, because every team would sign it for the shortest possible period, maybe month by month. There's nothing to say it has to be 1 year minimum, right? You could just have a week-on-week rolling
contract. Interesting.
So, you know, 1 week you could have a driver, the next week you may not have a driver. So it works in drivers' favours too. And plus, Perez isn't complaining, I'm sure, about the money he pocketed from exiting McLaren early.
Now a message from Luke, who said, Christine and Mr. C, just touching base to tell you how much I love Sidepodcast and Bite Size. Of all the media out there in relation to F1, and having tried so many, I only subscribe to your pods. Would you consider a foray into GP2, GP3 series, or the Formula Renault series? I'm a huge fan of the feeder series. Many thanks, Luke. Bite Size, I'm assuming, is F1 Minute.
So I like it.
Good name.
Sidepodcast Bite Size.
I was going to say, we're not really into GP2 or those feeder series, but I reckon there may be scope for more Formula E stuff in the future. Did you hear the amazing news?
What amazing news?
Frank
Montagne got a drive in Formula E.
Yeah.
I did hear it and then I forgot it.
I almost popped with excitement.
Yeah, you did. I forgot about that.
Yay.
Well, you did promise, actually, somebody in the Side Podcast comments that you would Fat by Fat Box a GP2 race.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, I should do that.
This season, you said that would happen.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a rash promise.
You volunteered yourself. So we could do more in that area. The problem is, at the moment, I think motorsport takes up so much of our lives The last thing you want to do is find more motorsport to follow.
I'm struggling to fit inside podcast as it is, let alone expanding
you are.
It.
But yes, you are. It's not a, right. I mean, too much motorsport isn't a healthy balance. And you want to follow enough of it that you still enjoy it. You want to keep the buzz there. You want to keep the excitement there. And there are so many feeder series, and there are so many other drivers to follow, and so many other teams to follow, and all the things to learn. It would be very hard to do as good a job as we always aim to do, surprisingly enough, for another feeder series, even Formula E. It would be very difficult to do. It's inspired and as enthusiastic as you may be, I might have to pull rank and say, no, Christine, no more.
Well, I must say that I've seen some of the GP2 races when we've just left the Sky channel on, and they do the coverage of that after the F1 sessions. And it's an interesting series is what it is.
You mean the crashes, right?
It's crash happy.
Yeah, it is crash happy. It's a lot of young drivers. I mean, many drivers will, feeder series work very well, and many of these drivers will one day turn up in Formula One. So that knowledge is transferable, but I don't know how on earth we fit it in. I'm glad that Luke likes us enough that he wants more side podcasts, but it would just be worse side podcast, I think, if we did anything like that.
Talking of people that like what we do, we think these people do. It's a Brazilian podcast called Podcast F1 Brazil. Inspired title, and they did a list of, was it five or so F1 podcasts that they enjoy, and we were in there. They talked about us, but we didn't necessarily understand every word that they said.
It was a top five of their favorite podcasts, but there was a bonus sixth entry, which was F1 Minute. So you essentially made the top five and number six. They extended their chart just for you. I assume it was positive. I hope it was positive. Do we have a clip? Can we play part of it? Because I truly don't understand.
I've got a clip, but I don't know. There could be swearing and all sorts in here because I don't know what they're saying.
A gente vai falar de um nome bem legal, que é o Side Podcast.
Bem bolado.
Muito bem bolado o nome, né? E sonoro. Side Podcast. Você consegue ouvir até chamadas e tudo mais. É bem divertido. O host, o pessoal que comanda o podcast é bem legal. É o Mr. C e a Christine Platform. São bem legais, comandam muito bem a conversa sobre Fórmula 1.
One of the presenters is Carlos, who's also written some really good posts for us on Side Podcast.
Big fan of Carlos.
So make sure you go and check out Podcast F1 Brazil if you can speak the language, and maybe if you can't, you can always pick up the odd word here and there.
Oh, it's fun. It's fun. You want to listen to it. It's very, very upbeat, even if you can't understand a single word of it like me. Link in the show notes?
Always. Now we're going back to Washington again in the US with a message from Richard, who said, recently discovered the Side Podcast on Android Podkicker app search while looking for anything F1 related to fuel my USA starved thirst for F1 news and commentary. Unlike the rest of the earth, we here in the US do not have a very active F1 fan base, and our TV coverage is okay at best since it's all Brits hosting, but leaves a lot to be desired since it seems to be designed to attract NASCAR fans to F1 by continuously breaking it down Barney style. Gets old real quick listening to the constant babble every race on how qualifying works and the difference between prime and option tyres. Thankfully, I've discovered many other options, usually from the UK, to provide a much more informative and more technical view into F1. I found Side Podcast to be a great resource for listening to commentary on interesting subjects, and also a great website without any endless ads and regurgitated news articles. I like what I'm seeing, and please keep it up. Regards, Richard. Now, this worries me because I'm going to be in the US for the Canadian Grand Prix. Am I even going to be able to watch it? I don't want to hear it Barney style.
No, but I do like, I'll tell you what, I am jealous of anyone in the US because NBC started a new series called, is it Off the Grid? Is that what the preview we saw? With
Will Buxton.
And that was insanely brilliant. I thought it was one of the best Formula One TV shows. I mean, it was only about 10 minutes, barely a show, but the best Formula One segment I've ever seen on the internet. I thought it was incredible. It was really insightful. It showed a lot of the fun of traveling Formula One style, behind the scenes kind of things. Apparently, they've got a full series of it happening this year. We can't see it because it's geo-locked, but you might be able to see it next week. And as for catching...
I'm going to watch them all.
Yeah. As for catching it when you're over there, I don't know. You'll have to come back and report. Is it as bad as everybody keeps telling us that it is? This is the absolute acid test, isn't it? Because for years on Side Podcast, we've heard that America have it worse. You know, as much as we complain about Sky and the BBC and all that. And we do. America have it much worse. Now, you are actually going to experience this for at least one race, if not two. And you can come back and you can report and you can tell us, is it truly, truly as terrible?
Is it Barney style?
Make out.
We heard earlier from Jordan with a bit of a rant, and now we have someone who's sort of recanting on a rant. Here's Davin.
Oh, hey, I almost forgot. I just had another thing about engine noise, and it's not a big gripe like you think it's going to be. Last time I did say how I didn't really like the engine noise, and I still don't really like the engine noise, but I rewatched Bahrain last week, and I found that I was getting used to it. So, I mean, although I'm not a huge fan of how they sound, I don't hate them as much as I used to. That doesn't mean that I don't wish they were louder like IndyCar. You should check out IndyCar engines.
It's always that way, isn't it? Oh, these cars are really ugly. You'll get used to it. These cars are really loud. You'll get used to it. These cars are really quiet. You'll get used to it.
Well, we've been there. In 2009, we took a look at the cars coming for the following year. Couldn't believe how ugly they looked. Couldn't believe Formula One could get any worse. We eventually got over it, and Formula One managed to get even worse. Year after year, the cars got uglier and uglier and uglier. But you just eventually, you either stop watching or you get over it. And that's, you know, that's what you have to do. You can complain about the engines all you like. You can complain as much. You can yell it from the rooftops. But you can't change anything. We saw Mercedes attempt to stick a trombone on the back of the car.
It was my favourite thing ever, because they said, we're going to try and fix this problem that everyone is complaining about. So they stuck this god ugly thing on the back of their car, and everyone's like, that looks awful. Well, you can't have it both ways. You can't fix the problem and have the most beautiful car in the world.
No, it shows just how difficult these problems are to solve. I mean, according to Mercedes, on the dyno, whatever it was they stuck on the back of their chassis made a difference, but in the real world didn't actually stack up to much. Formula One, it's endless amounts of development means no matter how much you hate something, it's always going to change. It's always going to be different. You know, 5 years down the line, they'll change the rules. 5 years after that, they'll change the rules again. Just stick with it as long as you can. Put up with the most you can possibly put up with. And if you can't deal with it, find something else to watch.
Complaints are in vogue this week. Here's another great voicemail.
Hello, Christine and Mr. C. This is IT Guy. I haven't called for quite a long time. I've been busy being, well, an IT guy. Just wanted to call and give comments on the new F1 season, as you requested. I've been listening to all the comments made by Bernie and Montezemolo and Red Bull. And I just want to sort of give you a list of everything I've sort of thought about what I think is wrong with Formula One at the moment. Okay, have a good night.
Hey, that's what we like. Big fan. Thank you, IT Guy. That's fantastic. That's the kind of positivity we love.
We do like positive feedback like that. Actually, we like all feedback, really, whether it's thoughts on races, thoughts on drivers, emails, voicemails. You can get in touch with us many, many ways. Email me, christine@sidepodcast.com. Call us, 012128TRACK. That's 012128-87225. The username is sidepodcast on Skype, or there's a contact form at sidepodcast.com/contact.
No excuses. We want to hear from you. And if you call us, we promise we'll do another show when we actually play out those voicemails very soon. We will do that. That's our commitment to you. We will do more shows this summer.
Giggles did exactly that. The excellent Alex Andronov picked up the phone and called us regarding an issue that was on his mind.
Hello, Side Podcast. This is Giggles here. Calling on the back of your comments about driver weight and the effect of that has on the drivers and the water bottle for Sutil and so on. And one thing that you mentioned was about the drivers not being a very good judge of the issue themselves, and the fact that they routinely race with broken legs and do all kinds of crazy things. They really aren't. And in fact, one of the best pieces of evidence of that is the autobiographies of drivers after they leave the sport. We know David Coulthard, for example, suffered from bulimia when he was a driver. That's a relatively recent driver. And he was, example to lots of kids and so on. And he struggled with bulimia because of the pressure he was put on by the sport. And I think there's a line crossed there when that's going on. And of course, you won't get any of the current drivers telling you that that's a problem. It's only after they leave the sport. And we haven't had that many from this generation leave the sport yet. So I think that it's something we'll see more of in the future, and the stories will come out. I mean, what's the reaction? I understand totally Massa should get an advantage. He's a small driver, and Mr. C's point there. But I think, to a certain extent, it's just easier just to raise the minimum weight requirement, and I don't think it would make that much difference to the sport that it takes the drivers out of danger, a danger that they are not best placed to defend themselves from. Anyway, thanks very much, and loving the debriefs as always, and see you soon. Bye!
He's right, you know, we won't hear about the worst cases until long after these drivers' careers are over. Suchel has raised, or has done a fine job of raising awareness now. And he talked about starving himself for 2 days. He tried to see how far he could push the limits. Not on a race weekend, not in a car. Not when he would endanger his or anyone else's lives. But he just wanted to see how much and to what length, you know, he could take it.
How much he could take and presumably what difference it would make to his weight.
Yeah.
Which I can't think would be a lot because there's not much of him as
there,
it is.
No, there isn't. But it's good. I think he seems to be the most sensible driver on the grid in this respect. He's taking it. You know, he's looking at it. He's analysing it. He understands the situation. He's trying to obviously make the most of his size, trying to get himself down to compete with the smaller guys. But he seems to be doing it in a way that's semi-reasonable.
Well, I don't think what he's doing is sensible, but at least he's being quite open about it.
We asked on a previous show for your stories about what was the strangest place you have ever, ever watched a Grand Prix.
Oh yeah, we went all local radio, didn't we? Just, had a phone in.
Just for a moment. And we've got one. We've got another one. We've got one from Matt G. And what was his, what did he send us?
He said he watched Monaco 2010 through a Venice Pizza Kitchen's tiny street window on a 15-inch CRT TV on the wall. His brother-in-law and himself asked the chef where there was a pub to watch the race, and then he offered the window instead. He said it was... It was fantastic. A couple of Aussies watching F1 getting rather drunk on his wine and eating pizza outside the window cheering on Mark Webber. F1 leads to many great memories.
That's brilliant. Can you beat that? If you're listening to this and think, well, that's not very strange. I've listened to a Formula One race in a stranger situation. I've watched a Formula One race in a stranger location.
Standing in the street in Venice, watching through a window.
I didn't say it was easy.
Okay.
You know, if you're a listener and you think you can beat that, if you've watched it in any, somewhere outrageous, somewhere totally unbelievable, let us know. Tell us. You've got the contact details. You've got the information. You know how to get in touch. We want to know your stories. We want you to tell us if you watched or listened to a Formula One race in a more peculiar location than Matt G. I think he might have won it, actually. He may have just walked off with the competition right there. two entries and the competition's over.
Mm.
He's ruined it.
He might manage to come up with another entry for this competition himself, because he is one of the SidePod crew that have gone to Canada this weekend.
SidePodcast on tour.
Yeah, part of the contingent going to Canada. And so far, I think they've got very wet. It's raining a lot. That seems to happen when they go on tour. It happened in Spa. It's happened in Canada. Rain follows the SidePod crew around.
I think if I were them, I'd go to Bahrain next.
Okay, finally, I have some predictions for Malaysia. I told you we were taking topics from anywhere.
But that was like the third race of the year. How far behind are we?
But actually, what I wanted to point out, this is from...
Were they accurate predictions in the benefit of hindsight?
Well, it says Mercedes will rule the roost.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's not really difficult to come up with predictions like that
okay. This
year. But this is from Shavoyan Mukherjee, who says... coming down to the race at Sepang, I think, like a million others, that Mercedes will rule the roost. It's pretty much a no-brainer. They're just like what Red Bull had been in the past few years. Also, this statement may generally be unpopular in the F1 community, but I support Red Bull, not Vettel in particular, but the team. But that's because I was a fan of David Coulthard since his days at McLaren, and I was slightly heartbroken when he suddenly shifted to a new team. But since then, my faith in the team has only been on the rise, and a fat lot good came of it too, don't you think? This season sure does look exciting, and I hope we see lots of new faces on the podium. My votes would be on Ricciardo, on Bottas, and on Hülkenberg.
Thus far, actually. Ricciardo, he's made it back to the top. We haven't got either of the other two.
And they've looked closer than in previous years.
Yes, that is the case. That is absolutely the case. The problem you've got is when you've got two dominant drivers, you've got a dominant team and both drivers are absolutely on their game, you've got one podium position remaining. And obviously you can't get everybody.
There's not a
everybody
lot of space
fits
up there.
Onto there. It's not a mixed up season like we've had in previous years. You're not going to have eight different winners this year. It's going to be Mercedes. One at some point, you know, you could hope that there's a bit of reliability. They might free up two spots. That could happen. Certainly as we get near the end of the year. But yeah, we've got to do a better job. Basically, you can't be doing predictions for Malaysia before the Canadian Grand Prix. That's terrible. You should be ashamed of yourself.
It's all
Christine.
My fault.
You've
as well.
Ruined my podcast.
I'm really sorry, but hopefully it should be better in the future. These past 2 months have been absolutely intense for me, and it's the kind of thing where it's not like I was studying the whole time, but your brain is just filled with other stuff and there was no room for F1. It was awful and I hated it. So I'm not going to go back there. I'm going to move on and be better and we're going to do all the things and be awesome.
In 2 weeks' time.
After this next little bit.
In the meantime, Side Podcast is going to be terrible.
Yeah.
While I bumble along best I can and suddenly
realise
just how much work you truly do by yourself as I try and prop up our tiny little corner of the internet.
All we can say is thank you for sticking with us, as always, because, you know, we're rubbish.
We're amazed. I'm absolutely stunned we still have any listeners. We really don't deserve it. We don't deserve anybody who listens to us, but we are grateful.
We love you.
We do appreciate it very, very much. And we will do our best to improve the situation. And do look out for new shows this summer. It's going to be a big old summer for Side Podcast, right?
It has to be.